Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back, listeners, this week to the 45th podcast. We're coming to you a little bit late again this week, but this time it's because there was a holiday. So wishing all of our listeners a belated happy Memorial Day. Hope you had a great weekend. And I'm here with my colleague, Susan Simpson. Susan, happy Memorial Day to you too.
Yeah. Hey, Rabia. How's Ramadan going?
Ramadan is slowly killing me, but we're halfway through. How'd you spend your long weekend?
Working. Mostly. I got out a little bit, did some hiking, but mostly I worked.
Well, that's good. I actually spent the day in the office yesterday too. Like, so that was my... But I could hear, I was in Northern Virginia, and I could hear many folks celebrating outside and saw many picnickers and bikers. And so I hope everybody got a chance to relax with family and friends and enjoy the holiday. But it's been a busy day already today. And add to all the stuff we already want to cover, let's start with the most late-breaking news.
I was just wondering if we actually had to cover this. I guess we gotta. But... Roseanne.
It's all connected, dude. It's all connected.
It is. It is all part of the same shit circle.
Yeah.
But Roseanne, her show has now been canceled.
Roseanne's show has been canceled at the speed of lightning, by the way, can I say, in response to a tweet. Well, okay, look, yeah, she's been crazy in the past, but I mean, like, I guess today's tweet was that straw that broke the camel's back for ABC. Did you see the tweet, by the way?
I did not see it. I know that she called Valerie Jarrett like a child of a monkey or something.
She called Valerie Jarrett the child of the Muslim Brotherhood. If the Muslim Brotherhood had a baby with Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
So there's like some anti-Muslim bigotry and straight up anti-Black racism. I mean, it's all kind of conflated. And then she did a apology tweet. And then she said, I am now done with Twitter. I'm like off. But in a matter of hours, this all happened. And then ABC's like, enough. We're canceling it. In a very, like literally one line, one sentence.
It was fast in response to this tweet. But I don't know if it counts as fast given that she's done very similar things, like ongoing. Right. And there was no reaction. And I also wonder, like, one, how are the ratings of the show doing? I did not follow it well enough. I don't follow it at all. Mm. I've never seen an episode ever. But have the ratings tanked lately? Could that be contributing or
that's
possibly...
interesting. I don't know. I mean, it got like interesting review. You know, people seem to really be enjoying it. And they're saying, well, there's this balance there with the other actors and the writers and they're, you know, but I refuse to watch it. So I have no idea how the ratings are doing, but that could be an interesting factor to see if it was worth it for them to hang in there for another season. I think they're like at the end of their first season anyways.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, it's good that ABC did step up and do this, but this ain't going away. Now it's just going to get worse. And this is probably going to have to end, or not end, but we're going to reach a point where someone, and hopefully not Trump, but it's probably going to be Trump on Twitter, claiming that it's not racist to call a Black person or compare them to a monkey or an ape.
Look, I fully expect Trump to hire her in some capacity at this point.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Communications director. Hope picks left a void.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling she's also going to be right back on Twitter very quickly. But you know what? History made her irrelevant at some point, and she needs to go back to that space. So,
Well, you know what she's been doing? So aside from being racist on Twitter, her other Twitter hobby is being a total 4chan conspiracy theorist.
Right.
And embracing the QAnon stuff, which was her last tweet before she decided to say, I'm gone from Twitter, was to retweet that, more of that QAnon stuff.
You know what? She also tweeted something that Donald Trump Jr. retweeted, I think, just this morning or yesterday.
Yep, the Soros thing.
Right. So she called Chelsea Clinton, Chelsea Soros Clinton, you know, saying that's her middle name. Then Chelsea responded, and then she went back. Anyway, and of course, Donald Trump Jr. Retweets it because why not? I mean, why not support the conspiracy?
Well, he also retweeted the one where she says that Soros is going to take over or trying to take over our democracy. I don't know the specifics. That line.
She said he's both a Nazi and a Jew. Yeah, she'll be back. I'm guessing she'll be back on Twitter and let's see where it goes. But, you know, she's forever wedded herself to the Trump campaign. And I'm sure Trump is going to tweet in support of her. I'm sure. His fallen hero, his crotch-grabbing, anthem-singing fallen hero. He'll tweet about her this Memorial Day.
He'll probably tweet back-to-back, like, how dare ABC terminate Roseanne's show, and how dare the NFL not fire kneeling players.
Yeah. I don't know if they don't see the hypocrisy or if they basically are like, yeah, these protections don't apply to everybody. So what?
The only governing policy is that their voices should have all the platforms and that the lefty scum should have none, basically.
No platform, lefty, no socialist, laws, no constitution, no nothing. Speaking of which, I don't know. I don't think we covered this last week. It happened, I think, afterwards. The NFL's new penalties for players. I'm fascinated. The NFL, essentially, this behemoth of an institution has kowtowed to Trump. I mean, Trump made this an issue. To me, it's the power of this president and his rhetoric. Like, honestly, I think, you know, if the players had been kneeling and Trump hadn't said anything, I don't think the NFL would have cared. They would have been like, whatever. I mean, like, you know, play your game, do well, win for us, make us money. And I think that's, I can't remember who wrote an article about the legal implications because of the influence of the administration on this decision. Like, you know, that would be like governmental interference with a First Amendment right. So I don't know how that's going to play out or if there's going to be a challenge.
They are definitely responding to Trump, and that's definitely an influence in this current debate. But I don't think they were necessarily going along with this free speech thing before Trump weighed in, because they were already struggling to, like, well, not struggling. They also, like, outright would not hire Kaepernick, even though there are lots of teams who before this have been considering him. Mm. And that's the full extent of my knowledge of NFL stuff, so I'll stop talking now. But I will say, yeah, I don't think the whole blame goes to Trump on this one, except for the fact that I don't care what the NFL does. I do care what the president does. And it's pretty disturbing all around. It's been like, you know, I will say, I guess I go through waves of, like, how I feel about things are going long term. But this past week, it's been pretty dark in terms of what's going to happen. I just, did you see that the filing came out in the Nasayed case? Sorry, I just got an alert on my phone.
What? What happened?
Justin just filed.
Oh, no, I did not know he did. Okay. Well, I knew he was going to. I didn't know he filed. Okay, well, we'll save that for later. I agree. I've been feeling a little bit pessimistic for the last week. And also, I was, by the way, and I want our listeners definitely to check out, and it sucks that you couldn't be on it, but I hope you are on it soon, Susan Simpson, the podcast called Mueller, She Wrote. I was on it for their season opener this week. It was great. I did a little interview with them, and we talked a bit about this. AG was asking me about what I'm following the Mueller stuff, and there's a part of me that feels like, you know what? Is anything going to come of all this stuff? Like, Mueller, I'm starting to lose faith in... I'm almost starting to believe maybe there isn't any collusion. Maybe they'll get hit with obstruction. But I feel like this family is going to fly through it. I feel like none of them are going to get charged, like really go down for it. I don't know.
Mueller could never save us. That was never... He never had that in his power, and he won't.
But I wanted him to. Yeah, I guess not. I will say that, you know, Tom Arnold, Roseanne Barr's... What was that, her husband? What was their relationship?
They were married, and it was a really screwed up relationship, and I read an article on it, and I wish I hadn't, because it was really disturbing.
Oh, God. Okay.
The whole thing's messed up, and there's definitely no... Like, honestly, I felt more sympathy for Roseanne by far than Tom Arnold.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, Tom Arnold was definitely the villain in that story.
Okay. I have a faint recollection of that time period in my life, but not a whole lot. But right now, Tom Arnold, I think he's coming out with a new show called The Trump Tapes, and it's long been rumored that he's got something on Trump that could bring him down. But at this point, I don't think you could release the PP tapes, and I think Trump is still going to be fine.
Tom Arnold likes to pretend like he has something. He has nothing. It's all scammy plays.
That could be it too. He could be just playing us all. Let's see, find out.
And I'll say, going back to what you said about Mueller, I don't. There's a different thing between, like, the family skating through and what happens to Trump. Mueller can't affect Trump. It's all what happens to him is political. Right now, there's no one in power to stop it. And the stuff he's getting away with without check is beyond Mueller's scope. Like the open corruption, a lot of that is not, like, that's not in Mueller. Mueller's not going to look at that because it's political problems.
Of course, yeah.
And without that being addressed, I mean, again, it's just a long-term backslide that once Trump is gone, where are we going to be? Because Trump will be gone one day. He will be out of office. And however that happens, we'll be left with America after. And I guess that's why I've been feeling down, because what I see of what I think America will be like post-Trump has not been encouraging. Nothing's been encouraging in a while, but yeah.
So the truth is that most of us are brushing our teeth totally wrong. We're not doing it long enough. We forget to change our brush on time. And that's actually not completely our fault, but it's because a lot of brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks instead of better brushing, but not Quip. So what makes Quip so different?
Well, for starters, Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes, while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help you clean your teeth.
I love Quip. I travel with it a lot just because it's not bulky. But also, they have a built-in timer and it helps clean your teeth for like the dentist recommended 2 minutes. 2 minutes actually can feel like a lifetime when you're doing it, but when you have the timer on, you know you're getting the timing right. And that's what dentists say you gotta use. So Quip has this guiding pulse that reminds you when it's time to switch sides.
Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and then sticks to use wherever else. So if you're traveling, no problem. Just take it with you.
Yeah. You know, they have a subscription plan, which is like kind of the important thing for people like me because I honestly forget. I forget to change the toothbrush heads on like the old electric brushes. But with Quip subscription plans, which are for your health, not just convenience, they deliver new brush heads on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. And that includes free shipping worldwide.
Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush.
So get your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/45th. Once again, that's getquip.com/45th. I don't know where Trump's going to be, but right now everybody's trying to figure out where Melania is. Apparently the last time she's been seen publicly is May 10th. It's been a while.
This is a really weird story, and the fact that no one, like the media doesn't care about it is the weird part. They're like, oh, it's just Melania, it's family, let's like not be intrusive. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm on board with that. But on the
she's
other
the
hand,
first lady.
The first
she's
lady.
Not just, yeah.
And she's gone missing, and she had well, I was going to say a serious medical event, but it sounds like it was not, like the what they said publicly is not that serious. She was hospitalized a lot longer than what we'd have expected based on what they're saying. Not that they should have to disclose Melania's medical condition. So there's a fine line here. Like, I'm not saying paparazzi needs to be tracking her down, but this is weird.
It's weird. And, you know, so apparently, you know, she had this, whatever this procedure was, I don't know, people have all kinds of rumors, but also apparently she was released to recuperate at home, but we don't know where home is. And then I saw something on Twitter that said that Melania changed her on her Twitter profile to New York, that she's now in New York. I don't know.
Wait, she
I didn't
did?
Check on that. Somebody, yeah, it was, let me actually do a real quick check as we're
on that. I mean, I think something's up. At this point, it's pretty clear that there is something happening. And she is the first lady, so it is our business. Like, is she back in
New
York?
No, it says D.C.
Yeah.
It says D.C., but it could be that it changed back. But a weird, really weird story came out in the Washington Post where Trump was with some reporters at the White House, and they're asking about Melania. He goes, oh, yeah, she's fine. She's right there looking at us through that window. Then he points at a window, and the reporters turn around, and there's nobody there.
That is some weird, creepy shit. Like, that's just like it's like a tale out of like a horror movie or something. Like, she's there looking at us. And that's just like usual gaslighting. Also, I just checked her personal Twitter account, and it does say New York City.
Okay.
But she maybe also has not used about. It in a very long time, so who knows? It probably never got
all
changed.
Right. That could be it, too. So maybe it's just part of the conspiracy. But yeah, it is. I think it's very odd for this many days to go by and no public appearance by the First Lady. So let's keep an eye on that. Somebody figure out where she is. Another piece of weird news. I don't know. Trump is dancing a really strange dance. It's almost like when a boyfriend and a girlfriend like have a problem and then are really close friends and then like they're on again, off again. But him and North Korea, Kim Jong-un, we are dancing a weird dance with them right now.
Because it's all
are we all
going to
die
him.
Or is it going to go away?
I mean, who knows how this is going to end, but what's happening right now, we've lost. America's lost. Our foreign policy is in shambles. No one's going to trust us to head anything. Like, we couldn't host a friggin' high school prom at this point and be trusted with that. But right now, I think will they, won't they? Is the meeting canceled? I mean, Trump did kind of cancel it, but he implied that North Korea canceled it.
So he wrote this letter that was a really weird letter. And apparently it was reported that he dictated every word of the letter, which makes perfect sense. He wrote this letter where he said, well, because of North Korea, I guess we're not going to have it, which is really bad, sad, and I really want to have it. And then I think he also mentioned how big his nukes are. And he caused like a state of emergency in like South Korea. They had like an emergency meeting to figure out what's going on. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to like really feel the fallout the most from any decision that's made here. But now I guess they're backtracking and saying there might still be a summit. And then there was the weird story that popped up where there was an anonymous White House briefing. I mean, I don't understand background. Why reporters...
Because it's background. It's on background. It's not anonymous. It was just like times past, the theory is that like you want a statement from the White House, not any one person. Because back then we believed in this concept of the White House being like a political entity as opposed to what it is now, which is just Trump tweeting off random nonsense and people inside running around like crazy. So it was on background, which, you know, you can debate the merits of, but like it's pretty normal practice and that everyone knows who's talking. Like the White House has agreed to do this. Like they're the ones who say, yeah, here's the background person. We just don't want to put someone's name on this because it comes from like the White House as an entity.
Right. Okay. Got it. So it's like an official. Okay. So there was a call with a bunch of reporters and this White House official said that there wouldn't even be enough time to have the summit at this point. And then Trump responds on Twitter saying, this is fake news by the New York Times. Nobody in my administration said that.
No, he said and that the source doesn't exist.
He said the source doesn't exist. But of course, audio emerged of the actual call. I was fully expecting Trump to then tweet, well, that audio is fake as well, but that didn't happen. But the point being, Trump does not want to make it sound like it's impossible. He's left the door open for this summit. And I don't know what North Korea is doing. I have no
idea
what's going on.
Right now, it's basically seems like it's on right now. I mean, what Trump succeeded in doing is splitting apart South Korea and America. Mm-hmm. And there has been more talking. There's been more, those pictures of the leaders of North Korea and South Korea hugging it out are remarkable. But that's not a sign of progress towards something good. It's a sign of North Korea having a lot more power than it would have had. And I guess the issue is Trump would be totally fine with North Korea being like a dictator state that tortures and kills its own people. And
oh, that's never been an issue.
Yeah.
That's never been the problem.
If he can convince, North Korea that we're all cool about that. Everyone's cool here. Torture. It's fine. We have no problems with one another. Well, I guess in his mind, theoretically, this could all work out. But North Korea, of course, is not going to trust that because one day Trump will be gone. And in theory, knock on wood, the next leader would not take the same approach to North Korea and human rights as he does. So their nukes aren't going anywhere. And that's the ultimate problem with his current deal making is that Trump wants a quick, easy win. He thinks it can save his presidency. He thinks if he can make North Korea denuclearize, it'll be good to go. He'll vote against him. But they're not going to do it. And he's not doing demands that they could agree to. So this is whether it happens or not. We're heading towards failure.
We're heading towards failure, but you note on our little script that Trump is winning the PR campaign. What are you talking about here? With North Korea or in general or what?
No, well, North Korea, possibly. I don't know what the polls look like there. I know the reporting is making it. He's trying to make it seem like he forced North Korea into this, which is part of the problem. He tweeted earlier today or one of the days, I don't know, that I guess my letter had the effect, essentially saying his letter caused this to happen, which one. The meeting was already happening before you canceled it with the letter, so I don't know if that makes sense. And two, trying to make this about showing who wins, on a personal level, is again a recipe for disaster. But I was talking more about how, in terms of the Russian investigation, Mueller's investigation, Trump is winning. The way that he has found a way to exploit the liberal Western approach to politics and the media, and as much as he complains about the media attacking him and the media having a campaign against him, they don't. But he does have a campaign against them. And there's no one fighting back because there's no one to fight back. And that one-sidedness is working greatly to his advantage.
Can I ask you, I've thought about this a lot. Do you think that the response of Democratic leadership or just Democrats in general, any of the elected officials, do you think it just needs to be ramped up? To get do you beat crazy with crazy or I feel like there's a big failure on the part of Democrats to prevent Democratic leadership to prevent the kinds of stuff that he's done, eroding confidence in all these institutions, the DOJ, whether it's the media, whether it's the courts. And you're right, on the PR front, I don't even hear the responses. I don't hear anything from, there's no counter narrative that's strong enough.
You don't beat crazy with crazy, but you also can't beat it with silence. And that's what I think the Democrats are in denial too. The political elite, so to speak, is in denial about how bad this is, how much trouble we're in. And they're afraid if they start describing things as reality, they'll sound like the, lunatic Fox News coverage of Obama. They don't want to be the ones crying wolf. They don't want to be the ones declaring this a disaster. And they're paralyzed because of it. I mean, there's a few voices that talk up. There's a few. It's not universal. But they could more effectively push back against Trump's rhetoric. They could make it consistent, like make it very clear.
It's just drowned out. I feel like it's completely drowned out. Whatever is might be coming out, it's just, I don't hear it. So, and if I don't hear it, I'm on social media all the time. I'm like, nobody's hearing it.
They're treating Trump like he's Bush, like a bad Republican president. They're treating him as if like he is the president and he's like doing a lot of terrible stuff, but like he's part of the process and will, you know, respond to it that way. But he's not. This is not a quantitative difference. It's a qualitative one. And without acknowledging that and the danger we're all in, they will not be able to effectively counter message.
Yeah. I think what's holding them back also is the idea of respecting the office of the presidency. But I don't know if that's a good idea right now.
If so, what I mean by Trump is winning the PR campaign and the Russia investigation is that, one, Republicans are fully on board with his idea of this being a witch hunt. But look at how, like, Spygate has evolved. Spygate, you know, as we discussed last week, is not Spygate. It's a really actually kind of small, boring story. There was one informant that approached people who either were periphery to the campaign or no longer in the campaign at all and asked them questions, and that's it. It's not, like, even... And as far as we know at this point, it actually had no real significance in the investigation. It didn't play a big role in anything. And yet he's called it Spygate. And of course, the media has jumped all over that term and is getting all over it. And he's going off about it being like the biggest political scandal since Watergate. But the thing is, if things are actually a scandal, you don't need to tweet that it's a scandal every single day.
Right.
Like people figure it out. I think probably every day this week he has treated this as a scandal. That's a lot of reminding that it's something everyone should recognize for what it is.
It's having an impact. I just read that last week, 12 House conservatives introduced a resolution calling for a second special counsel to investigate misconduct by DOJ and the FBI. And that's tied directly to this conspiracy theory that Trump is constantly pushing. Yeah. I mean,
and he knows,
imagine that.
It's a conscious decision on his part to make this a spy gate because he thinks spying sounds worse than informant. And he's pretty open about that. I will say one of his latest like branding campaigns, I don't think is that great of a move. It's his whole 13 angry Democrats line that he's clearly trying to make happen, but I don't think it's going to happen. Because it's just, it's not that catchy. In the point of it's hard to understand.
It's not that catchy.
Like, okay, 13 angry Democrats. Like what? Okay.
I mean, if the phrase is repeated enough on Fox and other places, yeah, it'll catch on too. I mean, like he's pretty good at this stuff at like, I don't know, maybe, yeah, he's like in the wrong business, but I feel like he's pretty good at
the dictator business. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of brilliant marketing. It's smart communications. He comes up with these catchy little, whether they're like derogatory nicknames for people or whether they're like, you know, calling the Spygate. It does catch on. It does catch on.
If you're willing to lie and tell the big lie and repeat it and willing to always attack, and you're willing to make it part of your entire position that facts are disregarded and that the truth is not important, then yeah, it is effective. It does work. I wouldn't say it's... If he was playing the game that we understand presidents should be playing, it would not be a good move, but he's not.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, he's in the wrong business, but there's maybe some... commercial business that could use his help, but
oh, you know what's gonna happen now though? I bet this is gonna end with Roseanne being fired, with him going in and tweeting the QAnon stuff himself, because he is going all in to the conspiracies lately, like full on conspiracy buy-in.
Is it really?
Oh yeah, and his tweets.
I haven't been following a lot of his tweets. Mm-mm.
I mean, they're all the same, so like it's hard to like keep reading them because they really all are kind of repetitive at this point. But he has definitely invoked like, I mean, all like the deep state stuff. And, like, Sally Yates is wrong, and the Obama administration spied on us for no apparent purpose.
Have they impeached Obama yet? I'm just wondering.
Oh, they're working very hard on it.
Okay, that's good. Well, I also read, by the way, that the House passed a bill. The House is just, I mean, like, these people, the Congress is just at his bidding. They passed a bill last week with military funding that includes funding specifically for Trump's parade. It looks like we're going to have a parade.
Oh, no, I didn't even see this. So having the damn parade.
Having the damn parade, yeah. It's happening. What are you going to wear?
I don't like any parades, and this is the worst parade. I'm going to have to like go somewhere that day and be really angry at the traffic. That's how this is going
to
end.
You know, there's a part of me that wants to... I mean, I think the resistance should show up at the parade.
No.
But... it would hurt him worse if nobody showed up. And so, you know, I think that would be great.
But I will personally judge anyone who shows up to that parade.
All right, I guess I won't go. So I work a lot from home, and because I do, I'm not always in business attire. In fact, I live a lot in leggings, because leggings are so much more than workout clothes. In fact, I would say leggings are hardly ever workout clothes for me. What about you, Susan?
I mean, if you're at home, why would you wear anything else?
Yeah, great leggings are absolutely a necessity, but it doesn't mean they should cost a fortune. And that's why I'm glad that we have Fabletics.
They make the world's best leggings. That's right, the world's best. You get comfort, quality, performance, and style for 2 to 3 times less than other activewear brands. And it's not just the leggings they make. I recently got a dress and a bra from them, and they are fantastic. They're super comfy, and you don't always need leggings because you also have that.
I got a beautiful sports bra and matching leggings. It's this gorgeous teal. It's so pretty that I almost want to wear it out, but I kind of can't. But anyway, the point is,
did we get the same one? I got a teal sports bra too, and it's pretty great.
You did? Maybe we picked out the same ones. Anyhow, they're beautiful. And you know what? Fabletics clothes are designed to move with you through your lightest workouts and your most intense. So one day I will test that theory. But whether you're lounging around the house or chasing your kids around, they're guaranteed to support you in any activity.
And their leggings are available in sizes extra, extra small to 3X and a petite, regular, and tall lengths. So whatever your size, there are pants for you.
Now, when you visit the site for the first time, you actually get a style quiz. Then Fabletics personalizes your shopping experience. Your favorite styles rise straight to the top. You can shop as a guest or you can become a VIP. And here's a spoiler, becoming a VIP is by far the best way to shop.
Imagine your favorite store was offering you a discount on all merchandise for the rest of your life, and all you had to do was visit the store each month to check out what was new, with absolutely no pressure to buy. You'd sign up immediately. That's the value you get from Fabletics VIP membership.
We love being VIPs, and you will too. So go to fabletics.com/45th now to get 2 pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24. Seriously, these are the world's best leggings, and that's no small claim. They're a $99 value. You'll get 2 for only $24 when you join at fabletics.com/45th. That's fabletics.com/45th. So immigration has been dominating the news cycle, social media cycle for a couple of weeks now. And there's a couple of big stories that seem like they're related. And I guess I want to kind of like break them apart. And I also, the two big stories that have been like really causing a lot of outrage and even gotten the eye of the mainstream media, Chris Hayes and a number of others have done segments on this, is the family separations, which is people who are arriving mostly at the southern border asking for asylum, mostly from Central America, violent Central America, that they're being separated from their children. And sometimes the children are as young as like from 18 months. I've heard 53 weeks. I've heard like six, seven. There was one woman who said her 6-year-old blind child has been separated. So there's this story of these parents being separated from their children as they're coming to apply for asylum, which I think is doubly reprehensible because these are people, I mean, who are being persecuted and they're applying for asylum, versus another story, which was about, came out, actually has been reported for a number of months now, that HHS, which is Department of Health and Human Services, apparently lost track of nearly 1,500 children that were placed through their department of ORR, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Now, these two stories have gotten conflated by a couple of folks, including Preet Bharara and some others, which is unfortunate, but it's complicated and I get it. And even though I practice immigration law, as somebody who has not practiced on a border state and has not done a lot of removal and detention work anyways, even for me, trying to understand and unpack everything that's happening has been a little bit complicated, but these are two separate stories. So let's talk first about the separation story. And this is, I think, a story that is very important. I think something that we need to find a way. I mean, the ACLU right now is challenging this. They have filed a lawsuit, which are challenging the separation, not challenging the prosecution, but basically what's happening is this. Earlier this month, you know, Jeff Sessions, and you know, they have been saying this for a while, but Jeff Sessions says that they're going to now criminally prosecute 100% every single person who crosses the border illegally, including families with children. Now, generally speaking, an illegal entry is a misdemeanor. It hasn't, and it's not to say that before Trump, people were not detained and they didn't, you know, go through an immigration proceeding which got them deported. That did happen, but it wasn't a policy in terms of this is a fixed policy. Now, they are now implementing a fixed policy. We're going to do this with every single person and family that arrives, and we're going to separate everybody.
And they've explicitly said it's because of deterrent effect. They are This is an intentional strategy of deterring immigrants.
To deter, right. And last year, there was also a report that, you know, people applying for asylum were actually turned away at the border, which also is kind of unprecedented. And I think it's very un-American in many ways. But last October is when this strategy went actually into effect of the separation. And since then, about 700 kids have been separated from the parents. Now, people who, you know, advocates and attorneys who are working in the border states have seen an incredible spike in these cases. You know, they'll be, what they'll be doing is they'll be representing these children who then become something called unaccompanied minors. And that's a legal status. And I'll explain that in a bit. But they're saying, whereas they would see a couple of cases a month, now they're seeing like a case maybe every day, a couple of cases every single day. So it's a lot more cases. What happens is, so when the children are separated, the parents are detained. Some of them might get a ankle bracelet and then they're released, but you know, they have to show up obviously for proceedings and stuff, or they're just detained. The children are placed with ORR, Office of Refugee Resettlement. They are kept with them for an average of about 30 days. And then in that time they attempt to place them with somebody in the country, like a family member, you know, somebody, family friend, somebody that the family knows. Now, I think that's a good strategy, but apparently Homeland Security is also now proposing that all these people that they're placing with, and I understand the competing issues here, but to do background checks on everybody the kids are being placed with, which might prevent people who maybe are not documented or don't have certain status, like to come forward to actually take the kids. And anyway, so it's, you know, part of the problem now is that all of this stuff is being handled like in a law enforcement way versus a child protection way. And it's all getting conflated. But one of the reasons it's getting conflated is because, and you know this, Susan, is that Trump has done his best to demonize these particular immigrants. You know, the rhetoric around MS-13, we've been hearing this for a long time now. He has been conflating these children with as gang members over and over and over again to create this fear that these kids are coming in. And apparently since this past April, the White House, it's interesting to watch, like, They did a post about how these unaccompanied minors, like there's a loophole in the law that allowed these unaccompanied minors to, like, for us to lose track of them, and then they can become dangerous to Americans. And they keep repeating this idea of these loopholes in the law and how it's dangerous to America and connecting it to MS-13. So we're now in a place where what ICE will do is flag all these young kids as MS-13 gang members when, in fact, ORR itself reports in their official report that only 1.6% of children that pass through their office have gang affiliations. But because they're creating this fear, they're turning it into a big law enforcement issue, not a child protection issue. Anyway, so that's that one issue, the separating of the families, which has, I don't know why you would separate. I mean, if you, first of all, are scared about where you're putting those kids, we do have reports. Some of those kids are ending up in the hands of traffickers. Doing background checks might prevent certain people from, you know, being able to take care of them. The foster system is overburdened. It makes the most sense to keep them with their parents in a way that they can still be supervised, meaning the parents, you know the parents will still return for their court proceedings, right? I wouldn't say house them together, but there are ways to supervise folks to make sure they return for their court proceedings. It would make the most sense to me. Now let's talk a little bit about, I just want to talk about the children who did ICE really like lose 1,500 kids. So this story has been reported and I have been tweeting about it too because it just sounds horrific. But basically what happened is ORR, they do follow-up calls just to make sure, you know, the kids are the 7,000 whatever kids. When they did this report, about 7,000 kids were the kids they followed up on last fall. Nearly 1,500 were, they couldn't do any follow-up with them. They didn't, like, they either didn't get a response from the families they were with. They got no information about where those kids are. I think this is problematic because somebody needs to know where those kids are. They could be with traffickers. They could be abused. They could be part of, like, you know, slave labor somewhere. They could be anywhere. There's also some pushback by some folks online, and there was one thread that got a lot of viral action that said, hey, listen, like, you are putting kids in danger when you are demanding that ORR know where every single one of them is. Maybe they went off the grid with their foster families or their families to, you know, so they could, you know, not be deported. That's an argument to be made, but there has to be some entity that knows where all the children are. I mean, at the end of the day, that seems like a non-negotiable to me. So
yeah, those, I mean, not presumably most of those kids are fine and somewhere okay and safe, but there is a very big opportunity there for those kids to not be okay. And given the government's involvement in having them end up where they are, yeah, there is a responsibility to make sure they're actually okay still.
Yeah. I mean, look, it is ORR's mandate. In 2002, under the Homeland Security Act, ICE and ORR were both created, and they were separated on purpose to make sure ORR does not do law enforcement stuff. Their job is child protection. So they have to come up with a mechanism in which they can say, we want to basically keep track. But the problem is this, just this past April, ORR entered an agreement with ICE in which it blurs all the lines, basically. Now what they're going to do is, I mean, previously their job was, you know, just to place the kids, make sure they're safe. Now what they've agreed to do with ICE is to say, here's what they're going to do. The refugee agency will begin to provide ICE with information, including names, fingerprints, addresses, and phone numbers on the children's parents or sponsors, as well as any other adults living with them in the same household. This was reported by the New York Times. That information ICE can use to deport those adults if they try to get custody of their kids again. The ORR will also allow ICE to access its own online system directly and enter information. So ICE can go in and say, they can flag them, this kid is MS-13, MS-13, and that totally screws them up when those kids try to ask for some kind of legal relief. So all those lines are being blurred, and I think that's where we have to figure out how to extract ORR from ICE again and give them a child protection mandate versus law enforcement. But either way, it's kind of horrifying and problematic. Now, I live in the D.C. area, and it's not as frequent of an issue here, but, you know, I'm going to keep my eye out for opportunities that, as a lawyer, that if I can help in this space, I'd be open to.
So what Trump has made clear in his tweets is that this is part of a strategy of using those children as hostages to get his wall and his other border policies in place.
Oh, basically, yeah.
So the cruelty is the point. It's not a side effect. It is the purpose of what he's doing.
Oh yeah, he tweeted out that this is the Democrats' fault. I mean, that's basically him saying that you're right. This is a bargaining chip that he's saying, because it's clearly not the Democrats' fault. There's no law. He's saying it's a law that the Democrats can change. It's not a law. It's a policy that Trump himself implemented.
I think he's suggesting that the policy he implemented that he could change if the Democrats agreed to give him what he wanted.
Right. I mean, he wants the wall. You know, at this point, I'm like, just give him the flipping wall.
That's what he wants. That's the strategy here. And it's going to work eventually. But it's not going to stop anything. It's not like he'll stop doing this when he gets something he wants. He will keep doing it. He'll keep making hostages and keep causing pain that he can use as a bargaining chip.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, especially because if you look at some of the political moves that have been made recently regarding immigration, that I think are important stories as well, but are not really being reported as much as some of the other ones, are these. Just this past Monday, Stephen King, who is just awful human being, but he introduced something called the Mayor Libby Schaaf Act of 2018, which calls for up to 5 years of imprisonment for any official who warns residents of ICE raids. And that's happened in the past in certain towns and cities where an official, a mayor or somebody, has gotten a heads up that ICE is going to raid. So they have given folks a heads up that ICE will be at this, let's say, processing plant. They'll be at this farm. They'll be here. So this proposed legislation would criminalize that and put folks behind bars for 5 years. In testimony in front of the House Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, one of our favorites, also is open to individual schools calling ICE to report undocumented students, which kind of took my breath away. But she actually testified to this and said, yeah, it would be up to schools. It's not something that, as a matter of policy, we should oppose. And then there's an office called the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. And like clockwork, Trump appointed a person who would be completely antithetical to any of the goals of this office. His name is Ronald Mortensen. He is an immigrant hardliner who advocates for restricting all kinds of immigration and is totally opposed to DACA. So some political moves that seem to suggest that, he could get his wall, but there's way more other things happening that'll still cause terrible immigration consequences.
So Fabletics has great sports bras, but they don't do it in every situation. And for those days when you have to get out and wear real clothes, The best bras to get for me are the ones from Third Love.
The great thing about Third Love bras are, first of all, they're gorgeous, but also they're tailored to your size and your shape, and they come in exclusive half cup sizes, which I don't know if any other bra does.
And also it's convenient. Skip the trip to the store, don't go to Victoria's Secret, just go online and find your fit online from the comfort of your own home. And no more awkward fitting room experiences.
I've had those. Yeah, and Third Love is made by women for women because, you know, their founders were frustrated by bra shopping and a drawer full of bras that didn't fit. So the co-founders and CEO, Heidi Zak, knew there was an opportunity to build a better bra. And you know what? They did. All you gotta do is go to the Fit Finder quiz. It takes less than a minute. Again, your size and shape are both important, and Third Love will help you identify the shape of your body and find styles that fit you best.
So do your boobs a favor and go to Third Love today.
Do your boobs a favor. That's like the best. That should be their motto. That should be their motto.
It should be. It's yeah. True, though. Because Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they are offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first order. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. So, and I will say with the caveat that I am not a fan of Avenatti. His tactics of keeping the story in the media have been successful, and on that front, he's done well. But I have very strong reservations about his lawyering and his direction here. And well, hopefully the case is strong enough where he won't blow it up. But what he is good at is keeping in the news and keeping this thing going. And as part of that, he released today emails showing that in November 2016, a week before the election, the Wall Street Journal was trying to cover the Stormy Trump story and the Trump Karen McDougal story. And as part of that, they reached out to Davidson, Keith Davidson, who was attorney for both women, and said, hey, let's talk this article. And he responded, Keith Davidson responded and said, I mean, it was a pretty ridiculous email. Have you seen it, Rabia?
I have not. Nope.
Yeah, it's basically was, wait, let me pull the language because it was that bad. He okay. he straight up said, if you do this, we'll sue you for defamation. This is wrong. I have no relationship with any client that's opposed to Trump. I don't represent anyone who's adverse to him. And like the closing line was like, here it is. If you don't agree to not report in the story, quote, I will be forced to take appropriate legal action to protect my rights, and you and the Wall Street Journal will be acting at your and its legal risk and peril. Govern yourself accordingly.
Okay.
And then he forwards the email to Michael Cohen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So what happened was the Wall Street Journal did public, they did before the election have an article on this. It did not have a big effect because the way it was framed was that the National Enquirer had a deal with Karen McDougal and that was it. Like they paid for the story. They caught and killed it. The end. They did hint in hindsight, like it's clear, like reading between the lines of that article, they're hinting that possibly there's more to it. Possibly Trump was involved. Possibly Stormy Daniels was part of the story, but they didn't go there fully. They did not suggest Trump had any involvement in these deals himself because in part, it looks like they were scared off by these letters from, Keith Davidson. And of course, as we now know from Avenatti publishing them, well, yeah, these were lies. What the Wall Street Journal was hearing was lies. And also, yeah, Cohen was part of it from the beginning.
I'm surprised that the Wall Street Journal would actually back down from like such a ridiculous threat.
I mean, I didn't back down entirely. They did go ahead and publish. They just, the part, how these threats succeed is not so much in killing the story always, but how it's framed.
Right.
They made the story not as, like, you know, less than, it was like, what, 4 days before the election when the story first came out about the affair. And it got hardly any attention because it was not framed in a way that was really that damaging someone like Trump, especially given that the pussy tape already come out. But here are some quotes from Hope Hicks in that article. It's Hope Hicks, a Trump campaign spokeswoman, said of the agreement with Ms. McDougal, we have no knowledge of any of this. She said that Ms. McDougal's claim of an affair with Mr. Trump was totally untrue. And Ms. Hicks said it was absolutely unequivocally untrue that Ms. Clifford, aka Stormy, had a relationship with Mr. Trump. So, yeah, the idea that the Stormy story wouldn't have actually hurt Trump if it had come out effectively before the election, I think it's at odds with the fact that he was outright lying about it
right.
through his spokespeople.
Right. I actually think Hope Hicks probably didn't even realize that she's lying.
I don't think Hope Hicks cared what the truth was.
No, there's that too.
But that whole issue segues into another article that came out last night from the Daily Beast on TMZ's reporting, which for some reason, and I say that, I know exactly the reason why, but all these stupid like gossip rag thingies have, their owners have close relationships with Trump and they all have like a pro-Trump agenda.
Yeah.
And as part of that, last year during the campaign, an attorney reached out to TMZ and said, I have a videotape of Trump in an elevator that y'all might want to cover. And then it disappeared. It was another catch and kill by TMZ, essentially. And I'm glad this story came out because, like, everyone's been hearing, there's been rumors of this tape for a long time. They keep popping up. You keep hearing them again. But nothing ever came of it.
And what's on that tape?
The story I've heard off and on is that it shows Trump, like, really violently beating Melania in an elevator. But, you know, I'm skeptical that it exists because at this point there is no proof it exists. And who knows? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But part of the reason we don't know if it exists or not is because of all these magazine owners who, you know, run interference for Trump.
Right.
And kill the stories that would otherwise get investigated and let us know about things like this.
I guess, I mean, I'm thinking, let's say it exists. Let's say it even becomes public. He is a Teflon cockroach. Again, I don't think anything would matter. I mean, I think Melania would probably, unless she's totally taken off right now, she could be in another country for all we know. But if she decides to stand by her man, he would put her in front to have her defend him because he's that disgusting. And then everybody would just go on. I think this is a reflection of how depressed we all are. So we just like,
because Trump is winning his war in reality. Trump is winning his war by extension on democracy. Democracy only works when we live in a shared factual reality, which we're increasingly not. And Trump is trying to make sure, to the extent facts still matter, they don't.
They don't.
Because the news only matters if people believe it. The news only matters if it has some bearing on, like, actual political movements or political reactions. And Trump is making sure that facts can't touch him. All that matters is his ability to bully others and to control them through whatever way he can find. And this strategy will likely not leave with him whenever he leaves office. And another thing that likely will not leave office when he does is the constant corruption. Mm-hmm. Although I suspect, at least, I mean, maybe I'll eat my words later, but I feel like Trump has set a bit of a bar here, and it would be hard. It'd take a lot of work to be this corrupt. I'm sure they'll try in the future, but just the sheer scale of the corruption continues to be off the charts. And last week, a story we didn't get to was the Elliott Broidy issue. And there's still more of a story there to come out because the Broidy thing is so blatantly corrupt. Yeah, I don't see how that, I don't know if it would be under Mueller's investigation, but there will be a federal case made of it because the corruption, assuming we're still a country where corruption matters, which debatably we're not.
Oh, I don't think we are. I mean, the Washington Post apparently reported earlier last week that there was a letter that was circulated by the GOP. It was circulated to dozens of wealthy, like, business people in China that had the insignia of the Republican Committee, and it offered access to Trump at a fundraiser. It said that, you know, these businessmen who wanted to get a photo op with Trump and a handshake could do it for $100,000. That's corruption to me.
Well, going back to Broidy, he wanted his client, George Nader, to be in one of those photos. But there's a slight problem, and that Nader is a convicted child molester. So he had to pay a premium. Well, the Nader didn't pay it. You know, Broidy paid it, $186,000 or something like that. And voila, the convicted child molester gets his photo with Donald Trump, both of them smiling. But the Broidy corruption also goes back again to Stormy, because again, it's all one giant shit circle. In that, just days before, you know, there's lots of, Broidy's been, he is the cockroach. He keeps popping up with new deals. Like, he's been involved lobbying for Malaysia, lobbying on behalf of, like, Chinese interests. I mean, he's covering it all. He does not discriminate. If you give him a paycheck, if a foreign country gives him a paycheck, he's going to do whatever he can to make sure Trump does what you want. But one of the things he did was meet with Trump in December of last year, 2017, on December 2nd. And this meeting was actually a day after something else happened. And that was when a certain contract prepared by Michael Cohen and Keith Davidson required the first installment of a $1.6 million payout to a Playboy bunny to keep her quiet about an affair and abortion she had with David Dennison. Now, when the story came out, of course, they said David Dennison in this case was not Trump. It's not the same David Dennison as the Stormy agreement. This time, David Dennison is Elliott Broidy.
What is up with that name?
David, it's a law thing, like defendant, plaintiff and defendant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the story right now is that Elliott Broidy, you know, guy on, like, the RNC treasurer, lobbyist, also pled guilty to a felony for bribery like in 2009. You know, I'm sure he's moved on since then. had an affair. And then for some reason, even though he is very rich and sophisticated and has resources that could allow him to get real attorneys, decided to hire Michael Cohen to pay off Cher Bouchard. We'll see where that goes. I remain deeply skeptical of the story. That's what really happened. And the fact that he got a meeting with Trump one day after making the first payment suggests that there is interesting times ahead for all of us.
Because I refuse to be shocked or depressed or anything by any of these scandals related to Trump anymore.
It's not the affair that's the scandal. It's the open and shut case of bribery that it could be.
Yeah.
If those facts are what they look like. You know, the evangelical vote's not going to care that he paid off a woman to have an abortion. They will not care about that. We're beyond that.
You think they'll care about bribery? Who's going to care about bribery? He's going to get impeached for bribery? What's going to happen?
The DOJ will care. And they are not totally under his view of, like, facts don't matter yet. They still have power. Mm. Law still have consequences. He's not totally free of that yet. And when a foreign agent who is openly representing foreign powers has that kind of blackmail leverage over the president, I mean, that's our democracy is way past the point of peril. It's like teetering on the brink of non-existence.
Okay.
on that happy note.
On that happy note. Yeah, it's always a happy note where we are. But you know what? Maybe the parade will cheer us all up when it comes to pass. I'm not going to lie. There's a part. Look, my family's from Pakistan. I was born there. And there's been a couple of military coups. And I'm like, you know what? Is it really such a bad thing?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's a really bad thing. If ever there was a time for a military coup, I would say this presidency was designed for it.
But you don't come back from that. And also the military would make things better.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, there's so much.
That's a quarter of what
happened,
but yeah.
It's a quarter of what happened, but it's some of the bigger news. And it sounds like it's going to be an interesting week. I have a feeling we're all going to be distracted by Trump and Roseanne for the rest of this week.
Oh, but, God. This is the worst timeline. It's been the worst timeline forever, but like... I don't want to talk about Roseanne anymore. I don't care about what happens. I just don't care about the story.
Well, look, for those of you who might be sad that Roseanne was canceled, fear not. Charlie Sheen just tweeted, now that Roseanne's been canceled, let's get ready for, you know, his reboot, which, yeah. Bring back 2.5 Men. All right. Well, thanks so much, Susan, for all the updates. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us this week. And we will be back in 7 days. Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.